Chapter 2. I'm taking a dramatic pause right now because I have to tell you a few things before we get to the most fucked up part of this story. Like I said, my name is Adam. I am 24 years old, and I was 23 on that night last November. I'm half Irish, half Filipino, if such a thing matters. I look like a tall, dark-haired white guy, and nobody ever guesses I have anything other than purebred American in me. According to all the records, I'm dead. If you look at that memorial that alphabetically lists all the people who died that night and the following morning, you'll see an assload of Adams listed on there. I'm the third one. Niff and Cece are both on there, too. Niff is listed right underneath me, but they put her as Jennifer. Everything you've heard about the Grindr is bullshit. Pure, simple bullshit. They don't know what they're talking about. Those college-educated bozos on TV who've written whole books based on nothing but the thousands of YouTube videos people posted after that night. I don't give a rat's ass about the Kyle Commission's initial findings. In fact, the only one who came close was that crazy asshole on the 700 Club who blabbered about demons and abortion and gay marriage. And even he wasn't that close. Don't believe the reports that say it came from the science lab at the university, or it rose from the reservation, or came up from Mexico. They're all wrong. I was there. I saw the damn thing born. Most importantly, I know what it was. I know why it was here. You take every scary-ass theory from the past 6 months and you roll them into a ball to make the freakiest, most terrifying thing you can think of, and you still won't even be close. But we'll get to that. First, I have to tell you more about Niff. I may be the one telling this story, but she's the main character here. Don't ever forget that. This is Niff's story. Jennifer. She hated that name, so we all called her Niff. I won't say everything was perfect between us because it wasn't, but at the end of every day, we slept in the same bed, we kissed each other goodnight, and we both thought that we were going to spend the rest of our lives together. We didn't have kids, but we had a ferret named Hamlet. Niff had tattoos and smoked just about anything available to smoke, and she was addicted to God, punk rock, and roller derby, in that order. She didn't compete in the roller derby herself. Her bones would have snapped like her cousin's leg the first time someone knocked her onto the floor. But she was friends with pretty much everyone involved in the local scene, and she never missed about dragging me with her. Niff and I were in school together since the 10th grade, but we didn't date until my senior year and not until after she had dropped out. We worked together at Big Shot Chicken. I was shift manager, well on my way to take over the chicken roasting world. Yeah, I was one of those guys. Straight-laced, did my homework, dotted my I's and crossed my T's. I had watched my dad fuck up my family's world and I was determined to do the exact opposite. It's funny. Niff had the same deal with her dad. The man was a genuine war hero, a pillar of society, the type of guy who won community awards and actually deserved them. The only thing he ever really screwed up was Niff. She hated him for it. To this day, I don't know what he did to make her hate him. I asked her once, and she started to cry like you wouldn't believe.
I don't know either,
she said. But by then, it was too late. This was at her mom's funeral, and her dad had been dead a year. The fast food gig, for me, was for my scholarship applications, so I could hold a job. My family wasn't rich, so I had to go through the whole financial aid and scholarship crucible. The college gatekeepers liked things like track team, honor roll, chess club, shift manager of a hole-in-the-wall chicken restaurant. For Niff, the job paid the rent on her shitty little apartment. She was only 17, but she lived by herself. Her mom had figured 17 was close enough and took off while her dad was out of town. He didn't even know where Niff lived, though he came into Big Shot sometimes to try to talk to her and give her money. She wouldn't talk to him, but she would take the money. I was a total asshole manager. I remembered Niff from school, but she didn't remember me, and that made me mad. It made me mad because she was one of those people you instantly recognized, someone you noticed when she was gone, and I had noticed when she'd dropped out of school the year before. For fuck's sake. I sat right behind her in Spanish 2 years in a row and she didn't know me when she got hired. She looked at me like she'd never seen me before. This one night, we were the only two closing up the restaurant, and I was chewing her ass for not cleaning off the tables in the dining room. I was ready to go, and she'd spent the last 10 minutes fucking with the radio because the DJ had promised to play a Bad Brain song. She was all excited because they never played that shit on the radio. I pointed out she had the CD sitting right there, but it didn't matter.
It's different when it's on the radio,
she said. Yeah, it's not as good.
You know what? Go fuck yourself. People like you won't ever understand.
Yeah, and people like you will spend your whole life waiting by the radio when you got the CD sitting right there. She paused then, just looking at me, noticing me. We'd known each other for 3 years, we'd worked together for 6 months, and I'd finally gotten her attention. I even felt a little triumphant right then. But then she opened her mouth, and both of our lives changed forever.
You either fire me or fuck me. That's the only way you'll get me away from this radio,
she said, leaning back against the wall. She pulled out a cigarette and lit it right there. But, I stammered. I was never bad with words, except when I talked to her. I never even thought I liked her in that way until she said it. She wasn't my circle. She was unique, an anomaly. I never thought we existed in a universe where she and I would get together. I wasn't going to fire her. Maybe write her up, but not fire her. I couldn't even fire her if I wanted. I didn't know what the hell to say. I don't have a condom, I said. She laughed and took a long drag on the cigarette. She let the smoke seep out of her nose, and I swear that cloud filled the entire ceiling of the restaurant like a storm.
Either you're a pussy, or you think I'm dirty. Which one is it?
I was so out of my element. I don't even remember what I said.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
She said, putting down her cigarette. We fucked right there on the table. Right where we make the chicken. I wasn't a virgin, not by long shot. I'd spent my whole junior year in a highly dysfunctional, insanely sexual relationship with a girl from the chess team. Niff, however, was a virgin, and that blew my mind. She had what seemed like hundreds of boyfriends, a parade of them, all tattooed and older. They came into the store every day to talk to her when she was supposed to be working. Those guys were her circle, but she'd never had sex with any of them. She chose me, seemingly on a whim. Just like that. I didn't understand. We didn't get together right after that. After that night, she pretended like it had never happened, and we went back to our old routine of me being the asshole and her being the unruly, I don't give a shit employee. But as much as she pretended, things were different. She stopped letting guys come over to the store, and sometimes in my peripheral, I'd catch her watching me. But when I turned, she looked away. Part of me wanted to never talk to her again. I had no plans on staying in Tucson, and I just knew hooking up with someone like her would keep me here. I knew what my friends would say. Stay away from her. What are you thinking, man? Nobody would guess we were a couple. At least not back when we first got together. I looked like what I was, a chess team nerd who corrected the chemistry teacher when he made a mistake. And Niff? She was a punk rock skater girl to the core, full of piss and vinegar and fuck you, even with her fine features like a porcelain doll you'd see for sale in the Sunday newspaper leaflet. Half Mexican and half white, she dyed her brown hair midnight black. So black, it would blend with the night sky, and she was just a disembodied, glowing white face. She always wore these striped knee-high stockings and Doc Marten boots that weighed as much as she did. Everywhere she walked, her footsteps boomed, but she made it look graceful. When she walked into a room, you knew she was there. And when she ran toward her cousin that night, when everything was still contained within the roller derby arena, everyone turned to watch her run. That's just how it was with Niff. She moved, people noticed. I screamed for her to stop. She didn't. She got to the main scrum of girls, and she grabbed the back of a girl's jersey as if she planned to throw her aside to get to Cece. But as special as Nif was, she, like everyone else, wasn't immune to whatever this was. She froze, hands fixed to the back of the girl. I continued to scream, only it changed from stop to no. What could I do? That feeling of helpless horror, hardly 10 feet in front of me, was unlike anything I had ever felt. I wanted to run up and help her. I almost did, too. I took a few steps forward. Someone grabbed my shoulders, and if he hadn't, I would have charged right down there. But as much as it pained me to stop, I controlled myself after that first second. I couldn't help her if I was trapped, too. I didn't run. I couldn't leave her. I fell to my knees on the metal bleachers, crying out in frustration, almost falling forward. Nif stood there, paralyzed. I couldn't see her eyes, but I could see the eyes of some of the others, and they held nothing. They remained frozen, like mannequins. More people stood around me, equally horrified. I recognized some of them as friends and boyfriends of the roller derby girls. One man cried out and rushed down the last of the bleachers, and he grabbed at the group just as someone else tried to pull him back. Both of them became stuck, covering up Nif so I couldn't see anything but her cherry red Doc Martens. The group of afflicted came too close, and if it grew any more, I'd be trapped. Crying and yelling, I ran across and down the stand so I'd have an exit at my back. The group of paralyzed people continued to grow, but more slowly now that the arena had cleared. As I watched, helpless, a cop ran in, a big, barrel-chested guy with a mustache. I'd seen him before. While the folks in the local roller derby scene were a friendly bunch, fights did break out from time to time that required a police presence. I didn't know his real name, but once the announcer had called him Officer Beefy Cakes over the PA as he entered the arena, and the name stuck. Whenever he came around, now the crowd would chant, "Beefy Cakes! Beefy Cakes!" and he'd wave. He stopped at the sight of the group, looked around in surprise.
"What?
Don't touch them!"
I said, frantic.
"If you touch one, you'll get stuck too! You have to do something! My wife is in there!"
He talked into the radio on his shoulder. He backed up, taking me with him.
How long?
"It just started a minute ago. It happened so fast!"
I told him what I saw, with the pink thing on Cece's face, but I said it so quickly I'm not sure he understood. I'm not sure he believed me.
"Everybody outside!"
he called. He tried to pull me with him, but I shouldered away, numb with fear. For her, for myself. But I wasn't going to leave her. Several of us remained in the arena, surrounding the group, just out of reach, all of us calling out names. It happened so fast. At one moment, the cluster was just that, a cluster of people. It all changed in an instant. The long tail-end line of people started to move. At first, it was a twitch, like a single snake or tentacle attached to the large, unmoving mass where Nif was. Then the line of people, 15 deep, rose impossibly into the air. It swung up into the stands, slamming through the onlookers. A guy got smacked in the face with the body of the guitar still clutched in the hands of the trapped musician. He flew across the room, crashing against the far wall. He crumpled to the ground, unmoving, as blood gushed out of his head.
"Fuck!"
the officer said, pulling his gun. He aimed, but he didn't have anything to shoot. The tentacle swung angrily in the air, back and forth, looking for targets. It picked up 6 or 7 more people, all at crazy angles, who swung loosely, except at the point of contact, as if a thick wire snaked through, holding them in place like Christmas lights. Outside, more sirens blared. The tentacle whipped toward the cop and me. I ducked as it whooshed over my head. The officer wasn't as quick, and his face smashed against the legs of a captured body. He lifted off the ground. I scrambled, crab walking backward toward the exit, not looking away. The long tentacle lifted over the main mass and broke apart. People rained down on top of the group, reattaching at the top, turning the mass into a quivering ball of humanity. People rearranged themselves, moving in a strange staccato manner, crawling sideways like flies on a wall. I watched in horror as the ball became tighter, a giant sphere several people thick. I cried out Nif's name. I couldn't see her, but she was in there somewhere, crushed against the others. People in the ball had obvious injuries, but their faces betrayed no pain. I wondered if they were dead, or kept alive by whatever force that was doing this. Suddenly, 6 shoots made of people sprouted from the thing. No, not shoots. Legs. The legs lifted the mass of 60 or 70 off the ground like a giant bug. The heads and necks of the captured at the top of the legs worked as pivots, audibly cracking as they fell into place. The weight of the creature. And I was finally seeing it as a single, horrifying entity, pushed down on those being used as feet, and their legs buckled. More people crawled down the legs to add support on each side, shoring up where bones had broken. I watched as one zombified person gingerly removed the roller skates from a girl being used as a foot. The skates clattered to the floor. The whole creature lumbered forward, stepping across the arena track and toward the exit. I huddled in front of the monster like a rabbit, frozen, not believing what I was seeing. I almost puked right there. More officers rushed in, knocking me down. Like Officer Beefy Cakes, they stopped and gasped at the creature. That's when I ran. I stood and I ran. Even as I fled from the building and out into the rainy night, I felt empty and guilty for abandoning her. My overwhelming astonishment at the whatever the hell that thing was overthrown by the crushing, debilitating shock at losing Nif so suddenly. Was she in pain? Was she dead? I wondered what happened to the police officers. I didn't hear gunfire, which I was glad for. More officers pulled up, and the night filled with sirens and the wails of those who'd lost friends, including me, punctuated by the clatter of the rain against the corrugated awning at the entrance to the arena. I only ran a few feet out past the barrier when I was blocked by a line of parked police cruisers. I barely had time to turn around, look at the arena, and think, what the hell am I going to crash? The large double-door entrance to the arena exploded in a blast of wood, metal, glass, and stucco, showering out into the parking lot. Bits of glass and metal ripped through the air. I covered my eyes and stumbled onto the hood of a police cruiser. The creature barreled out of the hole in the arena door, moving like a cockroach. Screams of despair turned to fear as the thing passed near me and into the small crowd, snagging people and police officers before they even knew what was happening. Its 6 legs bogged down in clumps of frozen bodies. The front legs collapsed and the thing fell forward, balling up like a 25-foot hedgehog, rolling right over cars and out into Grant Road. A small truck screeched as it careened into the thing, but the monster kept moving, showering the street with severed limbs and bloody clothes and tattered roller skates. The ball hovered in the middle of the dark street for a few moments, tightened and spewed dark blood from its top like a whale. The blood misted in the streetlights. The creature rolled west down Grant Road, picking up speed, leaving a crushed truck in its wake. The top was ripped off, the driver gone. A trail of body parts and gore smeared the street in its wake. To my left, a lone police officer popped off his gun. To no effect. I ran toward the road, passed through the cactus hedge, and stopped at the curb. I stepped on something in the dark, and I fell, catching myself on a bus stop pole. I looked down and saw a human hand, red and twisted like a dead spider, smashed into the curb. The monster was a couple hundred yards away, careening toward the intersection. It blasted through, rolling over more vehicles. The top of the beast hit a low-lying traffic light and body parts sprayed into the night. 2 of the ejected chunks looked like full people. They flew and landed hard in the middle of the road. Before I even knew what I was doing, I ran toward them. As I ran, the monster continued to roll down the road, going faster than I was. It swerved toward a Sonoran hot dog truck, packed with the Saturday night crowd. People screamed and scattered as it approached, but it caught at least another dozen victims before it veered back onto the road and rolled west. I cried as I raced toward the intersection. With all the blood, all the body parts on the road, how could anything be alive? The first person I came upon was a girl, and she was dead. She lay face down in the road, her head bent at an obscene angle. Her left leg was missing, and her arms bent backwards and up. But just past her was a kid I recognized, though I didn't know his name. He was alive. He was a Mexican kid, maybe 17 or 18, wearing nothing but jeans soaked black with blood. He'd been sitting near us in the stands, cheering for a girl on the bruisers. The kid sat up in the middle of the road. His right hand was a bloody stump, and the only finger that remained was his thumb. He gazed west toward where the monster had gone. I wanted him to be okay. I needed him to be okay. If he could become a part of that thing, be ripped off, and then be normal again afterwards, I would know Niff still had a chance.
Hey!
I said, running up. The rain was pouring hard now, slapping into the street, causing the blood to run and pool toward the side of the road. Sirens blared from every direction, and to the west, a loud crash filled the night. More people came running from across the street, survivors of the attack on the hot dog truck. They surrounded the guy in the middle of the road.
Hey!
I said again, not wanting to touch him.
Are you okay?
Blood seeped from his hand. He didn't acknowledge me, and my heart sank. A Mexican woman stepped forward and wrapped his hand in a cloth. She talked softly to him in Spanish. More people stepped forward to help or talk about what they'd just seen. Others wailed. I stood, numb, watching the boy as he gazed unwavering toward where the beast had gone. A man gave the boy his coat. The boy tried to stand, but people kept him down.
I have to get back,
he said, his voice a whisper. He had a thick Spanish accent, and I wasn't sure I heard him right. Around me, the crowd grew quiet. The night air filled with his ragged breathing, sirens, and the light clapping of the rain. I pushed forward, my heart racing. He's okay.
What? What did you say?
I saw them,
he said, still looking west. Muddy tears, or rain, ran down his face. He tapped his chest with his bloodied hand.
Papa, they wanted me to stay.
Don't worry, man, okay? We'll get you some help.
He turned toward me, moving in slow motion. The entire side of his face was cut up like it had been dragged along the asphalt. His left eyelid hung on by a small patch of skin and sat glued to the side of his head by the blood.
I know you. You're Adam.
Yes,
I said, stepping even closer. He emanated a strange, oil-like smell.
We see each other at bouts all the time.
He stared at me, then said something that made my spine chill.
Niff is searching for you.
I froze.
What?
She's calling to you. Right now. They're calling you. I hear them here.
He patted his chest again. He looked west again.
But he's going away.
What do you mean?
I asked. I became aware of how cold it was, but hope filled me. Niff was alive. Alive!
Maybe you shouldn't talk, dude.
Another guy said to the boy.
We'll get you an ambulance.
A large crowd had grown around us, and a lady wearing scrubs underneath her jacket tried to push me aside to get to him, but I wouldn't let her.
How do you hear her? Where is she?
I asked, though I knew very well where she was.
The grinder. She's in the grinder!
The boy cried out in pain, arching his back. He stood, despite everyone trying to hold him down, and he took off down the street, headed west and calling out in Spanish. A few people gave chase but gave up after he passed the curb. I didn't know what to do. Above, a police helicopter roared by, following the path of destruction. I looked around, realizing we were in the middle of the intersection, and a traffic jam had formed around us. A couple people honked, probably those who didn't yet know what had happened. I have to get to my car. Around me, the crowd burst into conversation. As I ran back toward the skate arena parking lot, I heard that word repeated several times. The grinder.